We are. I'm glad to hear you guys are the same. We're a little removed from some of it. We're on the outskirts of Los Angeles, so hasn't everything shut down as usual, and everybody's being safe. But we haven't. Our community hasn't really felt the brunt of it yet, which is helpful.
Yeah, no question. Here's been, you know, I know the students come back here, starting to come back next week, and classes begin a week from Monday.
They're already back at USC and some of them at UCLA.
Well, the concern, of course, here, the numbers here have been actually really, really good. Really good, as a matter of fact. But there's concern that once 30-some-odd thousand are reintroduced, that's that concern. Let's see how it plays out. Let's talk about see how it plays out. We saw it played out in the Big Ten. So from a network and from a business point of view, what is the potential financial damage? And can, if they do play anything in the spring semester, can it be made up for?
So there's a couple thoughts on this. We have a lot of conversations around it. It cannot be made up for and made whole in the spring semester. But there's a belief, you know, between those who are writing big checks. You know, a lot of private equity, a lot of venture capital, a lot of people with billions of dollars on the sideline have been flocking towards sports, paying attention to trends like this, sports betting, et cetera. And one of the most common sayings you hear today in the boardroom is that COVID-19 is the great accelerant. Right, a lot of people are talking about how it's going to create new markets, but a lot of the investors that are out there right now, and that's what's really driving a lot of the money behind, you know, the regional sports networks, the leagues, the commissioners, or the conferences, et cetera, is that what COVID-19 is doing is it's taking trends that were about to happen and it's moving them faster. It's making it happen faster. So we were on the way to more people working from home, and that's been accelerated. Now, what's been talked about a lot with the college conferences and which ones are playing or not are two scenarios. One, on the TV side, there's actually some benefit to it. Some, not a lot. But the way they're looking at it is now you're going to have two college football seasons. There is a chance that we have 8 months of college football. And yes, if the NFL doesn't play on Saturday, which right now it looks like they're going to play on Saturday, but if the NFL doesn't play on Saturday, now if you're the Big Ten and much more so the Pac-12, who gets dominated by the SEC, Big Ten, and ACC, but if you don't compete with the SEC for eyeballs anymore. So if you're holding a contract for Big Ten football, you're a little bit curious to see what it looks like in the spring when your Ohio State, Penn State whiteout game isn't going up against Florida, Alabama, or LSU, Georgia, or, you know, Miami and Florida State, or whatever that's out there. So they've talked about it really interesting in that way. But what comes up the most about the accelerants right now, and everybody's seeing it, you're seeing the article written in ESPN today about NCAA leadership, is this discussion that college football was eventually going to move the way of the super conferences, moving away from the NCAA and creating their own league, so to speak, which is something that's been talked about in European football for a while. So nobody knows right now, but there's been a lot of people, and you and I have talked about this, who've been banging the drums for certain kinds of changes, and yes, those changes are being sped up using the air cover of, look, we're no longer, there's an old thing, the innovator's dilemma, right, where you're always focused on your past revenue, so it doesn't help you innovate for the future. There's a whole book written on it about IBM and the changes in technology. That's what's happened here. We're no longer reliant. We're no longer tied to our past revenue streams. So new things can happen. And that's what's going to be really interesting. Because think about this, Steve. How great a content is it going to be for you if Penn State runs the table in the spring, whips Ohio State at home in the whiteout game, and wins the second national championship? And now they get to talk about who's better, the fall national champion or the spring one,
right,
for the rest of time.
Right.
Exactly. And we haven't seen that since Washington and Miami split the title in 1991.
Right. And you know what's interesting? You brought up IBM, because I've talked about this before. It's interesting how people who are immersed in a business where it's considered to be their area of expertise get so immersed in it that suddenly Apple and Microsoft blow them away because they weren't thinking outside the box. And that has happened with other businesses. To be honest with you, this has happened at times with ESPN, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
We're the worldwide leader in sports. We're the sports experts. And then you start asking yourself, why are you making the decisions you make, you know, for the people that are the experts? And it's amazing you can be so immersed that you can't see the forest from the tree sometime in your own business.
And that's, I mean, that's the story of ESPN, right? He bought airtime to put on high school sports. And the only reason he made it a 24-hour network is because they gave him such a big discount because they had so much inventory. He just wanted to buy 2 and 3 hour slots.
I know.
They gave him 24 hours, and he put everything on, and it disrupted everything because it accelerated our move towards, well, we want to consume sports content 24 hours a day, right? Well, you know what else I like? I don't mind playing college football 8 months a year. That sounds like fun to me. You know, a spring tailgate sounds okay if you find a way to make that work. It's also a situation where, you know, we're going to see a lot more movement towards unionization of players, and all this discussion is about player safety. You and I both know this has nothing to do with player safety. This is about money, and that's what they're trying to. Because if it wasn't about money, Nebraska would be playing in the Big 12 right now, right? There's just no question that they would have said we're going to go play in the Big 12. And it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens over the next 4 or 5 months because. A lot of these state institutions are publicly funded institutions. So Congress is going to get involved. And they're going to come in and get involved, and it's going to be even more political than we've seen so far. So long answer short, spring cannot make up for what they lose in fall, but it will create a unique opportunity for the media to cover this for quite a long time as this outlier year that we had. I just wonder how it's going to play out with speeding up, paying the players, creating a union for the players, right. That sort of thing.
I'll get to that in a moment because I was talking earlier today about a spring semester season. And say, for example, you start January 22nd. Well, that's a Saturday before the AFC-NFC Championship game. The next week's the Pro Bowl. That's your weekend. You don't think people want to watch college football on the Saturday before the Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
High ratings,
going.
And it's a great time of year, right?
Yep.
And
exactly.
Look, think about a, whiteout tailgate in early March, right? Leading towards the national championship game in May. That'd be exciting. I don't think it's a common thing. I don't think it's something they're going to do, in the future. But
Right. Now I'm
disappointed for you guys. We were talking about it before we got on because. There are teams out there right now who are well set up. Penn State was one of those teams. I mean, you guys have a generational linebacker there this year. You guys have a quarterback who has experience when a lot of Big Ten quarterbacks don't.
Right.
You have Ohio State at home. This is one of those years that there's a number of teams out there that it's I'm not saying they should play or shouldn't. I'm not going to opine on that. It's just disappointing for those kids who put the work in because, you guys were a legitimate national title champion or contender this year.
No question. I know just something Jack Ham and I have talked about. We know how good this team is, and we wanted to see them get a chance to do it. Now, again, this is all out of anybody's control. I'm not being critical of anybody's decisions here by a long shot. I want to get to the unionization part. I mean, you're right there in the heart of Pac-12 country.
Oof.
The Big Ten, the Big Ten players. Now, when they put out their demands, the only one I looked at and said, "Oh, they want free BTN for their parents." All right, okay. But they didn't get into money. Pac-12 did, and I also do know that the driving force behind the Pac-12 group is the same individual who was the driving force behind the attempted unionization at Northwestern in 2014. All right.
Yep.
So, okay. See, we always follow this stuff. That's why we know it. So what can, if any, because they're not fond of Larry Scott, I can tell you that.
No, they are not.
So what kind of perspective can you lend on, A, the group, and B, the leverage they have or don't have?
Here's the problem that they're going to have in the Pac-12. There's a reason Ed O'Bannon and the O'Bannon case was tried or attempted to be tried repeatedly in California.
Right.
As much as we don't want any of this to come down to politics, it all comes down to politics, right? And the reality is the Pac-12 is going to get a far more favorable labor law, labor court, labor, you know, Supreme Court of the state of California, than you're going to get in most Big Ten states.
And the ninth, in all political fairness, just so everyone knows that we have a handle on what's going on with this, the Ninth Circuit courts in California.
Yep, Ninth Circuit's in California. The Ninth Circuit's usually one that tends to lean very far that direction, right? When it comes to labor rights, when it comes to union rights, and it comes, that's why most of those cases end up, you try to get it in the Ninth Circuit, right? There's a judge in Long Beach people try to get into. There's a couple of others up north. So there's a lot more leverage for the Pac-12 than there is the SEC, than there is the Big Ten, you know, than there is the Big 12. Because the reality is, I mean, you can just look at the labor laws in those areas. We do business in all those different states. And it's fundamentally different, the kind of rights that an employee has in Arizona, Texas, New York, or California, right? So this is going to be played out in New York or California, because New York and California are going to be the ones that are likely going to give the players some kind of rights. The problem there is, these are state institutions that are tied together by conferences. They're not tied together by a central league, right? The NCAA is an oversight league. If the Pac-12 players somehow pull this off and then try to spread this to other conferences, they're not going to have any luck. That's the problem with it. So they have leverage. They have a ton of leverage in the fact that Larry Scott is basically a what did they call those? The dead duck, the Senate, when you're serving your Senate term before you've already been voted out. Lame duck. He's a lame duck commissioner right now. Everybody knows he's out. There's already been rumors about him getting bought out a year before his contract is up. All it's going to do, honestly, is further damage the conference and make it even more irrelevant. The battle has to come from the SEC or Big Ten. And unfortunately, I think the players there realize that if they take that to court, it's an 8 to 10 year battle like the O'Bannon case was, and they're going to be long gone by the time that happens. There was a Clemson player who pushed for this 4 or 5 years ago, and then Real Sports actually did an entire piece on him when he tried to do it. He was a running back who got injured repeatedly and tried to sue for, I forget what law he sued under, but he was trying to find a way to get reparations, so to speak, for the money that he had missed because of his injuries for those 3 years playing for Clemson.
Yeah, and there's also Nigel Hayes of Wisconsin.
That's
had
right.
Had put his name on a suit. Now, the key is, the reason that they put their name on the suit, you can only do it if you're an active player at the time. So Nigel Hayes had to withdraw his name from the suit once he graduated from Wisconsin, and then somebody else had to put their name on there. These are all things that a lot of people don't realize, Tony.
It's there's so much bureaucracy in front of it that the reality is, you know, in most lawsuits, people try to bury you in paperwork and drag the case out. But here, it really is only impacting these young men and women for 4 years of their lives. That's their amateur career, sometimes 5 years. And if they get an injury exemption, sometimes 6, and then they move on, right? And then it's going to be very difficult for them to understand what kind of damages there are. So they're fighting on behalf of the people behind them. And it's incredibly unlikely that they're going to get some kind of payout like the NFL Players Association did for the CED issues, because there's no centralized form of government, right? The NCAA is going to kick it to the conference. The conference is going to kick it to the teams and say, we pool this all together. Where's the money coming from? And what's going to end up happening is a very similar decision to what happened in the O'Bannon case, right? EA Sports is just going to say, forget it. We aren't going to do it then.
All right. So, first of all, how have, you know, we see the NHL in the bubble, Major League Baseball, the NBA. MLS is now going to attempt to do what Major League Baseball is doing. They're playing now.
MLS had
home
fans last night. They had 2,000 fans at the
Frisco
FC Dallas
Frisco
game last night. Yeah.
Frisco. They played Nashville and Dallas played last night. How have the ratings been for the return of sports? Have they been as strong as the networks had hoped? Have been good? Okay.
The interesting thing is the ratings have been very strong for almost all the sports except for the NBA. And nobody understands why. I have a theory. Wow. It's totally anecdotal. But golf ratings, for example, are through the roof from where they've been over the last 5 years. And my theory is more people are playing golf. You know, a lot of families, they're watching what they're playing. At least that's the case with my kids, right? If you're between if you have somebody in the home between 5 and 17 years old, if they're playing baseball, they want to watch baseball. If they're in basketball season, they watch basketball. Nobody's in basketball season right now.
Right.
So NBA ratings have not been doing great, but it's doing well enough to meet their network obligations to move them forward to next year. The bigger problem here, Steve, is that, you know, we're going to have massive – there's a lot of, I'd say, ignorant optimism that all of this is going to be fine in a couple of months and we're going to have a vaccine and things are going to go back to normal. But the reality is we're going to have massive labor strife in the NBA and in the NFL because what happens to the salary cap next year and the following?
Right. It's going to go down.
There's going to be a massive cut, right? So if you follow the letter of the law and just do what Rob Manfred did originally and said, hey, I'm just going to demand a season because I have it in writing, you know, that's the problem with the contract is everybody always falls to the lowest common denominator, and that's generally what the contract is. They have a contract that enables them to cut their salary cap by, I mean, it'd be 40% next year. So what happens? Are we going to have massive labor stoppages? Are the networks going to step in and say, we already took a pounding on this. There's no way there's going to be labor stoppages. There's just so much pressure on everybody to come back with less that's out there, even though the ratings look good right now.
Right.
And ratings are nice. TV money's nice. The NBA TV money is a much larger chunk than it is baseball and soccer. But these teams are losing ticketing revenue every single day. Sponsorships, premium suites, all that stuff that goes around, day of game stuff. And it's just, they're getting devastated.
What does baseball lose? What, $600,000 a game? Does that sound right?
It's absurd how much they lose. I was reading the other day that in the new stadium in Texas, it's like $850,000 or something per game. And the response is, just have the billionaire pay for it. Have, you know, Tillman Fertitta pay for what's happening with the Houston Rockets. You know, we're blessed in a way that we know some billionaires here that we work with. You know, they don't just have millions of dollars sitting around. It's in something else that also has gone down. They have to get to it. And so there's just this belief, I think, that we're going to get back to that state, and we're not. I think next year is going to be very interesting, and hopefully it accelerates change in a positive way, right? We get to a situation where maybe the players have a little bit more say, and they extend the rights because they just gave players the rights to make money off of their own endorsements, off their own likeness. Maybe they extend that right, right? Maybe we find a new way to deal with out-of-conference games and schedules, and that's where that all would be very exciting. But in the meantime, we just got to find a way to get the players to play, and the players are not going to forget, especially in baseball, what just happened with their last negotiation with baseball.
Oh, no, they will not. You and I both know that.
No.
Next year is going to be, because it runs out December 1st next year.
It does.
Tony, too long, my friend. It's been too long.
Yeah, I miss you guys. I'll be coming out to see you guys, but that's not happening anytime soon, unfortunately. So hopefully we get to chat again.
I think we'll chat again probably in another month. How about that? You want to make that happen?
Yeah, I'm in. Let me know.
I'm in. You know, we need to do this every few weeks because it gives everybody a different perspective and baseline to work with as to what's happening. To you and that wonderful family of yours, and they are wonderful. And I've had the privilege of meeting his wife. You and I have something very much in common. Married way above ourselves.
I outpitched my coverage and got a ring on it as fast as I could.
But to you and that great family of yours, please stay safe and sound, and we'll talk in just a few short weeks, okay?
You too, my friend. Thanks so much.